What's up, everybody? How you doing?
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm one of the hosts, Lee Frazier.
I'm Jonathan Canary.
And Johnny's got a nice, sweet ginger ale coming in hot, bud. Get that cracking. Crack it up. Get that on the mic. Oh, yeah. Look at that. ASMR. hope everybody survived last weekend, the old polar vortex.
Stella Artois.
Wow,
nice.
I got a beer in front of me. Wow, what a host.
Thanks, Gord.
What a host. I had a water pump freeze, but you know, that's neither here nor there. And was in Halifax for Wilderness First Aid. So if anybody, you know, wants a recommendation for a first aid course, I would highly recommend looking up Blair and his company, Adventure Safety, and going and doing this Wilderness First Aid. It is, listen, I'm going to tell you, it was like super hands-on. You know, normal first aid courses?
Yeah, kind of lame.
You sleep through them?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was not that, especially in the minus like 30 out, but super hands-on. This week's episode, though, is with a good friend of mine, Gord.
Trail manager.
Yeah, who joined us on the Highlands trip last year. That's when I first met him, and he hosted us in his house, and we're about to eat dinner and doing this intro. And
exciting.
Yeah.
We have a misadventure this week.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. We have a new adventure story from Weswek Gugu. We're just going to jump into it.
Hi, my name is Weswek Gugu. I am from Wagamaw First Nation. I am an avid hiker. I spent a lot of time exploring, adventuring, and hiking. Last summer, I broke my ankle playing baseball. I played in a co-ed beer league here and took a line drive to the ankle. So after a few months, I was able to go on some smaller hikes, and then I thought I'd go to Franny to be a little bit more challenging, push myself and push my healing forward. And so I had found out recently, prior to that time, that if I walked with bells, and it would be like walking with my ancestors. And so I wasn't really alone hiking. I felt a little bit better. I had a bear bell, so I was making sure it was really loud, walking the back way from, you know, the top of Franny back down to the parking lot. And so I heard this voice from behind me go, "Hey, how's it going?" And I freaked out. I started screaming like, "Ah!" Turn around, saw that it was a guy from the parking lot I had met earlier. And I turned to him and I say, "I thought you were one of my ancestors."
Always good to walk with bells on in case there's bears around.
That's also, yeah. That's,
definitely.
I think that's the reason for the bells.
Yeah. You know, walking with your ancestors, though, is I would have probably gotten a fright, too. But he sidled up behind me. So, do you want to jump into the pod record?
Yep, we'll get this intro done and jump into this podcast and eat some roast beef.
Let's get the roast beef on, buddy! Pretty sick, right?
Oh, man.
How comfortable are these things?
Well, they're not bad.
Oh, I love them.
No, so this is good.
I ordered the mics, and I was looking online, and the mics are $140, and then it says N1T Plus for $170. So I'm like, oh, okay, the plus must mean it's a microphone and the arm. I'm like, you know, an extra $40 or $50 for the arms.
You just have to hold one to your face, right?
Well, we have arms, but the arms are kind of cheap.
Yeah.
We have really cheap ones.
This is like the Canada arm.
So this, this is the deluxe arm, right? And so I'm like, okay, so the plus must mean it's a microphone plus the arm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look in the photo and it shows a microphone and an arm. And anyways, the box arrives at my house and I open it up and it's just arms. And I'm like, oh my God, did I screw this up? Like, did I order only arms? It just doesn't come with microphones. And so I look and I read into the description more, and sure enough, yeah, the plus is just that it is the arm. There is no microphone. So I'm like, shit, man, I'm going to have to send these things back. And so I was like, I'll just have a look at one. And I opened it up and I was like, yeah, I'm keeping these. I'll just order the microphones too.
I think this is cool.
Yeah.
Much better setup than the other ones.
Great sound. Yeah. Royce, can you get that gravy there? Because I think, well, we're going to be way late here, I think.
Ooh.
Way late. Well, we're going back in time. We're going back in time.
Are we going back in time, Gord?
Going back in time. You tell me when we're going to...
Well, hey, buddy, we've been recording this whole time.
Okay.
So, so we're back. Another episode of this podcast, eh? Hey?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bud. Hey, bud.
Don't call me buddy guy.
What'd you get up to this week?
I did a lot of schooling and working at a little bit at the convention center, a little bit here and there, a little few interviews. Yeah. It's been busy.
Yeah?
Yeah. What about you? You've been making things out of wood. Pipe burst.
Pipe fixing. We had an idea. Yeah, it's been a week. I'll put it that way. Building some things, fixing over the last weekend the old polar vortex. I was doing a wilderness first aid course, camped out outside just outside Halifax in Sackville for the course. So it was cold, so I shut the house down, thinking, you know, that's it. I shut it down a million times before, no problem. Well, anyways, got home, pump froze, split wide open. So I've been like 3 days of back in when I first renovated my house, and I've been living out of like water tanks and for cleaning and having to boil water on the stove to get hot water to clean and blah, blah, blah.
We were doing the same in a hot tent.
Well, there you go.
Up in North River Wilderness section. That was beautiful.
Hot tent.
Hot tent. Yeah.
You have a hot tent?
Yeah, I have a hot. It's an enclosure. It's made out of canvas, and then I took an old tent and I buttoned up the front of it to make an actual hot tent. And I have a titanium foldable stove. So my buddy and I.
I think you had the stove with you one time.
No, you haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
No, this is titanium, 5 pounds, and the enclosure itself is 5 pounds of canvas. So
cool.
We share the weight, and it was -26 getting in there. Blustery. Our eyelids were frozen shut. We were crying, and we were just like little boys. lost in the wood.
Sick.
And then we got into the old growth section, big hemlocks, big pines, unbelievable. 4 foot wide growth. Tower.
Where?
North River, Little Falls.
Okay. Yeah.
Fantastic. Nobody in there, just us crazy.
Nobody else is going to be in there. Yeah, that's for sure.
A beautiful little like unknown kind of place. If you go to the Little Falls, you go to the top of it and you cross over. So cross over the river. There's a little tributary that kind of comes out of the woods there.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And if you follow that up, there's a little like 6 foot waterfall. You climb that and you follow it up more. And there's another like maybe 8 foot waterfall and you climb that.
Nice.
And then there's a waterfall that's cut out of the rock like a circle.
Wow.
And so you can stand in the water. And on three sides of you is a waterfall.
Come on.
It's so fucking cool.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What? Were you going to say something?
No. Who do we have with us? We got Gord.
Yeah. Gord, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Let the people know who you are.
Well, I'm Gordon Collinet. I'm alias trail manager and on Instagram. Thanks to Jonathan Canary and meeting him and... you know, over a year ago, and I'm flying with it, with that handle anyway.
Big
and
fan.
Getting outdoors, trying to get other people outdoors, and got a few years under my belt. But the story I'm going to tell you is from 1983, so we're going back 40 years.
Wasn't even there yet. Wasn't even born yet.
Me neither. I wasn't even a thought.
Oh, my Lord. Anyway, there was a world. there was a world then. Right, so it spun.
Oh, was there?
Spun at the same revolutions per second, or whatever you want to measure it at.
Yep.
Anyway, you know, to give you a little bit of a preamble, my buddy at that point, he was 10 years my senior. He was kind of my mentor. He was in the outdoor scene way before I was, and I was only a young gaffer. So anyway, 10 years spread. And I learned a lot off of him through the years. And we went into what you would call Manning Park, which is a provincial park in southern BC. It's right on the border. So if you went in from the Vancouver side, it's a good 2.5 hour drive. If you went in from the interior where I lived in Merritt, you'd get in there in 3 hours. So we'd had to leave the house at 0:30. Just to get there by 9-ish, right? So we we went on a mission of snow caving. So that was our thing in the day.
Snow caving.
Snow caving, yes. Wow. So you would, we started with just little kids' shovels and then, you know, progressed to an avalanche shovel and some probes, and you'd find an area where there's really deep snow drifts, mm-hmm. and you dig in and you spend a night or two, and it's fantastic. It's like returning to the womb.
I like that.
It's you can literally hear your pulse, everything, and it's just amazing. So
is it warm in there? Is it warm in the womb?
Versus the outside, yes. It's yeah. It's a constant zero. Mm-hmm. And outside, it can be minus 50. Wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. Inside, it's always going to be zero.
Cool.
So there's a few idiosyncrasies that you need to know when you're digging a cave. So it's not just, oh, you're digging it into a drift. So you basically dig a 4-foot pit downward, like a miner, and then you cut a shaft at 45 degrees. Right, and then you level off and then dome it out. There's a lot of displacement of material. Got to remember, you know, you're carving it out with a shovel and then kicking it out with your hands and feet down the shaft to the opening in the 4-foot pit. The other guy's shoveling it out as quick as he can, right? It takes a 2-hour process roughly to do a snow cave, mm-hmm. okay? And it'll glaze over inside, and you put a couple air holes with your ski pole, and you're good to go. You can cook in there and then survivor.
Sick.
It's pretty cool. So our mission that day was to do a snow cave. And when we got there, let's say 9 in the morning, it was already snowing. And you're in the Cascade Mountains, and you can just picture the Cascades, not being like the Rockies, but you're up 6,000-7,000 feet. Right, there are higher mountains in the Cascades. Mm-hmm. So our trip was planned to go to Monument 83, which is on the U.S.-Canada border. So if you look at the border, it's got monuments, markers mm-hmm. along that axis, all the way along from coast to coast. Mm-hmm. So this one was called 83. Mm-hmm. And it had a cupola-styled cabin. If you can picture a cabin with a little bit of a build-on on the very top.
Yep.
Right? So that was built in 1930. Prior to that, all they had was something like a deer blind or whatever up on a tree.
Yeah.
Right? So that was built in the 30s. That was kind of like a fire tower lookout. Then in the 40s and during the war, it was kind of used for security, you know, for the land-based security right at the time. And then in the 70s, it was used as a...
party shack,
is it? Yeah, you know? For the hippies and like myself
the old orgy cabin.
And yeah, it was a search and rescue area where they, you know, they coordinated stuff for people getting out of the... woods. So anyway, we started off that morning, you know, with all the ambition in the world, mm-hmm. and it's a 16K to 20K hike in, and we did it by skis and a 50-60 pound pack. So it's hard enough walking with 50-60 pounds, but staying stable on a uphill climb with skis on in driving snow, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
So anyway. My buddy, and again, I'm the junior. I'm going on his best intuition, and he said, "Oh no, we should get there. You know, no problem. Just at around dark." Okay, cool. You know, like, and then as you're getting into the day, you know, 2 o'clock, you're taking a little break, and it's snowing, and then 3 o'clock, and then I'm thinking, "Geez, we should hunker down. It's getting kind of a little darker out, right?" Mm-hmm. It was like January-ish. And anyway, he kept pushing, and I said, "Oh, no, it's not that far, not really knowing how far it was. We had no GPS. It didn't exist in those days, right? Mm-hmm. We had a paper map, and you weren't digging that out in the dark and in the snow.
Cold.
So anyway, went on his intuition and his good gut feeling, and anyway, we went till about 5 o'clock. We just said, "Frig, we can't go anymore," and the snow picked up. Like, it was a blizzard. So knowing it was a blizzard and it's taken 2 hours to dig a snow cave, you know, then we started. So we probed the area, found a nice drift, and then started digging. So mm-hmm. 2 hours later, we were exhausted. You can just picture all day you're skiing uphill, yeah, right? Exhausted. And then we dug her and got in there, put out the sleeping bags, all the foamies, got our stoves out, a couple of candles lit, and then we started cooking. And then all of a sudden, boom, the ceiling caved in.
No shit.
The only thing that was exposed was our heads with no lights. Everything was snuffed out. We had no headlamps like on our heads at the time. We had them on the ground level, and then our candles snuffed out all our meals. Everything was effed, right? So we didn't panic. We we obviously were gasping for air because we barely had our heads above of the existing snow, and it was pitch black, and it was a driving blizzard and you're confined because you got all that snow around you, all that heavy snow. So you got to dig your arms out and loosen up and then get out. And then we kind of felt with our hands where the shovel was and then found the headlamps and started to dig and dig and dig and dig until we formed kind of four square walls, found mm-hmm. our shit, and then put a tarp over top and laid our skis on top, and it snowed all night, and we salvaged that situation. And then and then the next morning, we finalized to the cupola, to that building there, and that was the mission, to go and see the view into the Cascades, into mm-hmm. the northwest wilderness area of Washington State.
So when you got bunkered down for the night, when you guys decided to carve this cave out, how close were you to the cabin?
Probably 3K.
So, right? Yeah, so close, but not super close.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, fair enough.
But, I mean,
impossible to find in the dark.
Yeah.
At least you stayed warm digging that hole again.
Yes.
You know?
You're sweating like a pig, let me tell you. And were we ever hungry? And we had food and everything, but it was all full of freaking snow and all mush, right? So it was an experience and a half. So, the moral of the story is go by your gut feeling when you should end your day and have a bit of comfort, mm-hmm. right? So I learned a lot. Like, yeah. Don't push it just because someone says, right? Go by instinct. Mm-hmm. And gut feelings.
Yeah, so. The gut feeling's like a learned asset. You develop a more of a sense of of trusting that gut feeling. The more you do it, the more you get out there, right?
100%.
So that's how a lot of people get caught up into issues, is because they don't listen to it. They don't know when or what that feeling is like.
Yeah,
and then that gets them into shit because of ego.
Because I've been exposed to different people, different scenarios through my life, you get caught up in these scenarios again. And you're trying to talk people through the situation, and you get caught up in another situation. So it just, but basically the moral of the story is use your gut feeling and use some common sense, intuition, and then stop it so you can enjoy the rest of the evening.
Right? Big snow cave guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to dig them all the time.
Really?
And in Cape Breton, I've only dug maybe 3 or 4.
We probably haven't had that much. I mean,
this is not a good snow caving year.
No.
Definitely not. And, and I was up in Micah Hill the other day skiing, and they got about 50 centimeters average, maybe up to 90 in the woods. Mm-hmm. So, but you need some drifted snow on the edge of the barrens and that to find a nice drift to get in.
Yeah, we used to do it as kids with Boy Scouts. We were growing up.
Did you do them like Quincy style, where you had to pile the snow first?
No, we dug banks.
But we had snow years when we were younger, right? I mean, it's changing, right? So
no, we used to, like, I was looking at footage from the Highlands trip. Shit, I think like 2000,
like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then when we did it, we did the horseshoe loop, and there was tons of snow. And then compared to last year and this year, it's like drastically. But who knows, right? It might be this trend of getting less and less snow, but next year might come along and it might just be like wide open.
All of us, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It's been like that since I was a kid. Yeah. But on average, I do think, from what I remember, it's getting a lot less snow over the years.
Exactly. We can still get the odd big snowstorm, but we're not getting that consistent snowpack.
Yeah. Which isn't great for all those people that bought like $20,000 sleds, right?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine being those guys this year. All those guys that spent all this money in COVID to get outside and bought a $20,000 sled. And
crazy. Should have bought some snowshoes.
But we used to take the extension poles, like from your Four Season tent, Easton aluminum poles. They could be 16, 20 feet long. Mm-hmm. That was our probe. So when we had 2-3 feet left when we're probing, that's when we knew we were deep enough for a nice snow cave. Sometimes we dug them on the edge of a cornice hanging on a cliff. Mm-hmm. That was stupidity on our behalf. We lived through it, but excellent view in the morning when you wake up and you're standing on this ledge overlooking a cliff and everyone's holding their coffee in their hand and saying, whoa, it's pretty cool.
You were out recently for a winter camp, weren't you? Did you go out? Did you go out with Jamie?
No, that's coming up.
Oh, is it?
Okay. That's coming up this weekend. Cool. No, I did the North River one with my buddy.
Yep.
And that was the most recent one.
Cool.
How many days outside this year? Well, I guess it's only started the year, right?
Yeah.
What did you count the amount of days you were outside last year?
Like actual overnighters?
Yeah.
No, it was quite a few actually.
Yeah.
Now that I'm retired, I have more time, so I can dedicate more time to that, right? And my darling bride or wife, she allows me.
I think she wants you out.
I think so.
She's giving us the thumbs up.
And so we linked up last year. I mean, you guys met on a trail. That's how you guys met,
right?
That's right,
yeah.
And then he influenced you to get Instagram.
Well, I was going up to spend the night. I think it was in April, probably the beginning of COVID. We weren't allowed to leave the CBRM, but I snuck out of the boundaries and went up to the mountain. Cape Dauphin Mountain, is that what it's called?
Just over the ocean here, yeah.
And I ran into you guys. I was pulling my truck up that trail. Everybody walks up. I just started driving the truck up.
And I suggested you turn it around. You said, no, I can figure it out.
Nah, it'll be all right.
Classic.
I'll just leave it in the bushes for the night. And we got to chatting, and I said, oh man, do you have Instagram? He's like, no.
What is Instagram? Like,
you got to, buddy, you got to get Instagram. You got to get on we have such a great outdoors community. He was like, all right. And, you know, a couple days later, I get an ad from Trail Manager. I'm like, what a sick Instagram handle that is. Yeah.
And you even gave me your phone number on a piece of paper just so I wouldn't, you know, the old man brain, right?
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
It worked out. Yeah. And then we did a big trip in the Highlands mm-hmm. Crossing with Live Life Intense.
Yeah, then you joined the Highlands trip last year, which was fun. It was a swing of temperatures quite a bit like at least the first couple of days.
Oh, that was wicked.
Yeah.
Wicked. Plus 10 to minus 18, minus 35, wind chill, blizzard. Yeah.
That first night was nuts.
It was crazy. I mean, we lived through it. I mean, good call on the tip over cabin for a dry out for
everybody. That's kind of where you're like you're talking about gut, and that was kind of like you take the group dynamics into play, and you think about, you know, just what scenario you guys are getting into. And a lot of people that were not highly experienced in, especially winter, if it's an overnight, whatever, right? Or if we're doing one more night.
It's a mental state. Right? You have to get yourself in a mental state, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not, you just don't go, whoa, I'm going to do this 5-day trip and everything's going to be honky-dory, even Steven. It's not.
Yeah.
Every day fluctuated.
Yeah. And I mean, it's that's just come from experience of being in those situations before and having to deal with it and being like, okay, well, you can see 5 plays ahead and see it might not go that route, but it could also go to the route where we're all sitting there hypothermic, hugging one another in a tent and then pressing the SOS.
Well, the river crossings were kind of the wild card last year, right?
Yeah. For you,
because basically normally in Cape Breton, our rivers or brooks up there are all frozen. You just snowshoe across.
See, years before, there's photos that I have from 2011, 2009 and the other Highlands trips where we are literally, I would bring like 20 feet of this fishing line that I use, right?
Yeah.
This plastic doesn't freeze. It's like great, right? So I bring that mostly because we'll tie the water bottles and you'll be fishing water out of all the streams because there'd be probably like 15, sometimes 20 feet of snow. And then to be this little hole, little opening. And you look down.
That's crazy.
And there's a brook underneath you. And so you just line up, you start fishing water out of it.
Yeah.
One bottle, fill everybody's bottles. Yeah. And that's kind of how you did it. But last year was a little bit different where we had more of a milder winter, and even though everything was cold and frozen up there.
Yeah, but still deep on a couple of the holes because you had to use your ski pole, which is quite long, and then you hooked on your water bottle to get the water out.
Yeah.
So that was still deep, but not crazy deep.
Really crazy.
Not for the highlights, right? No.
Yeah.
No, like there was a year where we went towards Benji's Lake. We had to do the 5-day and 3 days, and it was myself and three of my friends. It was around, I think that was 2011, and we were crossing the Mackenzie River high up behind Benji's Lake, and we dipped down to that valley, and that river, we were able to walk right across it, and it was probably 15 feet of snow. And I have pictures from that when we were filling water up before we get up top, because once we climb that, and you're talking like probably 5 feet of fresh powder too. So what a stairmaster going up those mountains.
Imagine.
Oh, it's crazy.
You got to lift your legs up so high each step.
And for every one step, it's like you're going back two steps.
Yeah.
Right. And so it takes you forever to blaze a trail and cut a trail up. And then we got up there and there was like, the trees were so thick and it was so much snow. It was like, a maze. We were going forward and then had to go back and work our way around.
Yeah.
And it was like I didn't think we were ever going to get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I was going to bring my sled, right? Like a pack sled last year. And then Lee said, no, I don't know, you know, like Tuckamore and stuff like that. And then good call, because the brooks would have been a bitch, because you'd have to unpack the pack out of it and all the gear and throw it over and then throw the sled over separate. And it would have been a nightmare.
So speaking on gear, you're the gear guy. We were just talking before the podcast about some cheap buys. So I went on Amazon and started looking up reviews of tents. I'm curious because I have seen stuff you have. Also, a friend of mine, Deneen, when we were doing our whitewater kayaking stuff in November, he showed up and he had a four-season tent. And I asked him about it, and I think he had bought like a no-name company.
Right.
And a guy that he knew from, this might have been one of the ones from this company in Alberta, basically a guiding company doing overnight trips. They outsourced getting tents made from like the same factory as any of the big brands.
Yeah.
Paid a fraction of the price, all of his own logos all over it. And then he just sells it at the end of the year and orders new ones. Right.
Nice. Yeah.
And, so that piqued my interest to do like a deep dive. And I just spent a couple hours over a course of like, you know, a couple weeks, like saving, you know, adding a wish list and just going over reviews and looking up features. And so I found one that was like highly reviewed. A lot of the reviews, negative reviews, were because the poles, they're like, the poles are so tight trying to put them in. But if you have any four-season big winter tent like our North Face ones, you got to like shove those things in. You feel like you're going to break them.
Yeah.
So that's what I figured all those reviews. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe this is decent.
Yeah.
So I'm going to test that out this weekend. But you were just showing me your pad.
Yeah.
Ultralight pad. And you bought that on
Amazon, and I researched it. And in wintertime, you need a minimum of 4.5 to 5 R value, right, for conduction on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So this had 4.4. You accompany that with a Z Light or a Blue Foamy, you're good to go. You got your back covered, right?
Yep.
And then I just recently at the Dollarama looked at a painter's ground cloth. It's laminated plastic on the bottom, kind of rubbery plastic, waterproof, but on the top layer, it's kind of like a felt.
Yeah.
And it's warm to the touch. So you put that inside your tent and you've got moisture management mitigated right there, right?
Yeah.
Or you can put it underneath your tent, either or both, right?
Yeah.
$4.50. You can.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the price of the Therm-a-Rest. I think the X-Therm, that the winter one, it's like an R5 or R6 or something out of the gate, ultralight. But that, I think, wholesale was like close to 200, if not $200 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're expensive.
And their top-of-the-line winter expedition one is like a 6.9 R rating.
That's the one I was looking at then.
You're looking at $285.
Yep, that's the one. That's the one I was looking at. I just figured, crazy. I mean, and plus... I just wanted to trial run and see, right? The quality and that sort of stuff.
You don't need top gear to get out and have fun. That's what I learned.
Oh, no, you
from,
don't.
From the get-go. Like years ago, we did army surplus, bought what you could, right? And through the Christmases moving forward, you just put a wish list together and you got some good gear.
Yeah.
And hopefully, and you know, a lot of my gear is 40 years old, but it was well done at the time, mm-hmm. well built, and I still have it. Take care of it, you're good to go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep it simple, right?
Yeah.
The KISS program.
I was talking to some of the people that are joining us this trip going over the Highlands and going over like base layers and insulating layers and that sort of stuff. And I just happened to be in Sydney and we're at Starbucks, which is right next to Value Village.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to pop in Value Village. 15 minutes max, I was in there and I had probably 24 items.
Nice.
In my hands that were either like the Patagonia quarter zips, merino wool sweaters. I mean, a lot of it is like dress clothes.
Yeah, but
layer those.
It doesn't have to be a brand name, but it's the material.
Yeah,
that's
so
the key.
I went looking through. It was like men's large
wool sweater right there, $7 out of Village
day. So I bought a couple of the items, and then wool gloves and wool hat and all that sort of stuff.
Nice.
But easy, like finds, more or less for like insulating layers. So I recommend everybody buy a really good base layer because you don't really find really good ones there. But those insulated, yeah, I was amazed because I've been to that one. There's one in New Glasgow, the Frenchies in New Glasgow, mm-hmm. always has a million things. Crazy. That's the like tip that I tell people, and almost everybody I tell is like, oh yeah, that would make sense. I'm like, dude. Like, mm-hmm. you just look at the tags, you can save yourself a boatload of money.
100%.
So that's all my work.
A lot of times it's brand new with a tag on it still. Mm-hmm. It just happens someone cleaned out their closet and got rid of it.
Well, the one in Glasgow, I'm pretty sure it's just like a couple, like it's old guys kicking the bed and then they just dump their entire wardrobe
100%.
At Frenchie's because it's like, you know, a rack is like eight of the same brand, like Woolrich quarter zip hoodies. And like, there's like six or seven of them, right? Same size, same look. It's like the exact same. Everything's in the same size category. Cool. But yeah. But as far as like, I mean, gear, what is your top pick for like somebody that wants to get into winter camping? What would you recommend them looking at first?
Oh, God. So you're talking like, let's say a tent?
Okay, let's go with that. Let's start with a tent.
Yeah, I would even go simple. Stick with your three season if you've got a half decent three season, because you're not looking at snow load, right? That's not the thing that's going to keep you from winter camping. Because 9 times out of 10, you're not going to have a big snowy blizzard.
Yeah, right? Here in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, exactly. So like you can get away with your three season tent. Keep it simple when it comes to stoves and stuff like that and pots, because you can get them at Value Village too and other places cheap. Stove, I've gone with. Just recently I got a titanium alcohol burning stove, but the Trangia, it's foolproof. There's zero moving parts, right? Made out of brass, made in Sweden. I've had mine since I was like 18 years old, my original one. I still have it. I've bought a brand new one since, and I got into a titanium since, even lighter. So keep it simple in that respect. Sleeping bags, army surplus, army gear is good.
Yeah.
Or just get a half decent comfort rating bag, down or synthetic. I recommend synthetic for the Maritimes because we have a damp climate, but you can layer up, right? You can get a fleece liner.
Yeah.
And, or a vapor barrier made out of nylon. And on the outside, you can, for moisture management, because you're expelling air out of your mouth when you're in your tent, it's going to frost over your inside of your tent, but it's also going to land on your sleeping bag. Mm-hmm. So you want to cover that also. Again, that ground cloth I was just talking about, that can be laid over your sleeping bag, mitigate the moisture right there. Two in one.
I had a real bad issue last year with the Gore-Tex bibby, the military one.
Right.
I borrowed that, and the old bag was
wet,
frosted right to the bag. So but then again, like I like how you you mentioned the blend or synthetic. I mean, I use a blend, but like the down, I've been very apprehensive and recommended people to go buy those. One, I mean, it really depends on your application. They're generally lighter.
A 1 or 2 day trip down is excellent. But my own experience with the Highland trip last year, day five, my bag was getting wet, right? Mm-hmm. It was staying wet. There's nowhere to dry it.
Yeah.
Right. We didn't have tip over cabin on day five.
Yeah.
Right. So each day you add, you have more moisture.
Yeah.
And then you can't get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that's where those synthetic ones come in play because they don't lose the air value.
100%.
But they are heavier. So, and that's why I like mine's a blend. It's a mech one. I got to fix a little bit of it because I got a couple holes in it.
Mine's like the Cadillac mech one and it's a blend.
Yeah. Yours is the newer version of mine, right?
Yeah.
So yours is the Talus, the mine is 30.
Cadillac, buddy. Oh, I've never had such a good sleep in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is, it's on, I think that one would be the next one that I buy. Either that one or there's a company out of the States, and I'm trying to remember, it's like Mountain something.
Mountain Warehouse?
No, they're expensive bags. They're like Gore-Tex lined. They have one called I won't buy this one. It's a minus 50 Celsius bag. It's called the Bison. It's like $1,500 sleeping bag. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And their picture, their promo picture is the bag floating on a lake, zipped up floating on a lake.
That's cool. That's cool. That's pretty out there.
It's like, that'd be for our Antarctic adventure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's another one. The Thermarest has one. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I don't think it's the Parasec. It's maybe the Ranger. It's like a minus, I think it's like either minus 20 or minus 30 down, but it's got zippers for your arms. So you can like sit up, stick your arms out of the bag and do stuff.
I've seen that one. That's cool.
I almost ordered it.
There's a Zen Bivy out there. It's kind of a new one. There's a lot of people.
I've seen those.
They're rating it pretty up there.
Yeah. Right?
What is it?
Zen Bivy.
Who makes it?
Zen Bivy.
Zen Bivy.
Oh, okay. Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They've got a bunch of things incorporated into it that are all inclusive. So I think it straps onto your Thermarest pad or any other pad too, right? So it's kind of cool. A lot of guys like quilts, but like a My Army Surplus down bag, it's got a 3/4 zipper. I can actually use that, which I did on a couple over winter trips as a blanket or a quilt. Because basically you have a foot box, you shove your feet in there and just invert it so that the zipper is on top of you, right? And then you're good to go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to adjust this mic just a little bit. Oh. Get it so you're comfortable.
We're there, yeah.
You're getting a little far away.
Yes.
You got to keep that in mind. It's a little, if you're used to doing these podcasts, but it's all good. Trips, what do we got for you? What's coming up for you other than coming with us on the Highlands trip?
Well, which Highlands trip? There's one on the 20th, and then there's another one coming up on the 10th.
Yep.
10th of March.
Yep. Well, other than those.
Other than those. Well, I'm going this weekend with one of the guys who's going to be going on the Highlands trip, so I'm going to be breaking him in a little bit on the gear, especially. I think physically he's okay and all that, but mentally I want to get sure he's in the right frame of mind and the gear. So once we overcome that, one thing I do want, if we do have some snow coming up, is to do a trip to Ball Mountain in Rear Bedeck.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. That would be cool.
That's on my list. I would start, let's say, from Lewis Mountain Road. You could ski in. You could pull a Polk. You could do it on your back. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's a multi-use trail. Takes you into Big Glen. From Big Glen, you go north up to Ball Mountain.
I don't even know where that's at.
Yeah.
It's in Rear Bedeck. It's, you know, where the golf course is, the 9-hole course. You take that road in, and then it'll end. And then that's where all the snowmobilers disembark. And then you can keep going. The road will split.
Yep.
And then one road goes up to Ball Mountain to the viewpoint. The other one will go to the base of Ball Mountain. So there's two ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do some reconnaissance trips in the near future to check it all out. And I want to do a little bit of a loop. You can go to Ski Tuanla, maybe spend a night there up at their little cabins. And then you can actually make a loop by skiing the power line or snowshoeing the power line and getting right back to your vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So a round trip might be about 40K-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 days.
Yeah. It's in, I'd say, 2-3 days. You want to have one nice stay at the cabin there.
Yeah.
Or you can just try soft. Try to do it all in like a day, man. Shit. Just try to suffer.
Yeah, but when you reach my age, you want to enjoy more, right? Slow down. That's what I'm trying to teach people. Slow down. You get more out of it.
Jamie, who you're going with, mountain goat. And physically, yeah, he could crush that.
Yeah.
But I liked what you said there is like, you want to make sure he's mentally in the right place.
100%. Yeah.
Because when I went on the first winter trip I ever did,
I wasn't with you
but like mentally, I had no idea what I was getting into. Right. And physically, I really, really trained for it. I trained to suffer.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a different, I trained for a different kind of suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so, like, I was really, really struggling the first trip we did.
Well, winter camping, generally speaking, is uncomfortably fun.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, it takes some time getting used to. But once you get in that groove.
Yeah, exactly.
And you acclimate, you get there, you know.
Yeah. I think after your first night, everything is gravy from that point on.
Well, I mean, when you're doing multi-days in the winter, it's all about your kind of kit. So I have to get, last weekend I was doing this
wilderness. There's an order also.
Yes, and right. I was doing this wilderness first aid course, right, in Halifax. So we were during that polar thing. So we were camping out and, you know, just setting up and where things are at in the tent. You know, you don't think about it until it's like the winter, summer. Not so much. Winter, it's like the little things, like the headlamp, having that at the same spot. You know, you put your boots in the same spot. You do this. You structure everything. You put your bag, you put your food, your water bottle, whatever. Everything's in its own spot, and you have a routine. Because when you get up, it's less wasting time looking for something. That's right. The biggest thing I find. And every year, takes me like a minute to just kind of like, I have to go out and do it again.
Yeah.
Just to... You know, I have notes on my phone and stuff that from last year where I'll review it and be like, oh, yeah, this.
It's all time management. You know, you have to, like when let's say if you were at the stoves first thing in the morning at daybreak.
Yeah.
Right? It was still dark. I could hear the stove going. And then I said, okay, I'm going to get up, do my stuff, pack all the sleep gear so that you keep the moisture from it. Pack everything away and then come out and meet you, have a coffee, have a breakfast.
Is this before or after I'm yelling at people, being like, this is your last chance to get coffee?
Oh, yeah. You guys are up having breakfast and getting coffee. And yeah, I'm like,
I made sure I was all packed before I even had breakfast or a coffee. I was packed. I was ready to go.
Yeah.
I didn't have to piss around.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is that's why, like, when I'm organizing any of these trips, it's a standardized approach. As I was telling you, like, on last week when you called me, or this week when you called me, I like to have everything standard. So everybody's eating the same shit.
Yeah.
Everybody's cooking on the same stuff. It's all really set and it's all teamwork. It's like you get up, everything, you know how it's, there's no variables, right? So if you have somebody else coming on the trip
there won't be any bacon on this one that I'll be bringing.
You know, no. You're not going to suffer hauling a couple extra pounds.
No.
You know?
No. Oh, my pack was 63 pounds last year.
Well, the pack alone weighs about 30. So
the first time we portaged the packs over a river, you were like, pass me my pack, eh? And like, I had passed you everybody's pack.
Yes.
And you were like, pass me my pack. And I went to pass you. I was like, wait, you're carrying this? Holy shit, Gord. Yeah, this is twice the weight of my pack.
It was brutal. Yeah. Yeah. It was hurting.
Yeah.
So I'd say. Anyway, the Seawall Trail trip that we did last October,
yeah,
I had it down to 43. And I brought a lot of extra shit too, bacon and all that, because Bardsley wanted bacon, right?
Listen, it's this summer is a whole different ball game.
But 43 is comfortable.
You can
deal with that because each day you're shedding a few pounds anyway, right?
Yeah, you know what I found about hiking that this summer and doing like multiple trips like that and not having to carry all my camera gear is that I really enjoyed hiking.
When you didn't when have I didn't. 25 pounds of gear.
Yeah.
Ashley had all the gear.
Yeah, like it was like, oh wow, this is what normal hiking's like. Yeah, like I forgot all about this because I was so concentrated on bringing gear with me, like drones and batteries and cameras and lenses and batteries and batteries. And
It's
the batteries. The batteries and lenses kill you.
That's the thing. Like my lens is like 2 pounds. It's like ridiculous.
Hand warmers came in handy for electronics, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I learned this past weekend was test your hand warmers before you go, because the ones I bought from Costco are they're going in the they're going in the bin as soon as I get outside.
Just check the date on them. They are dated also. Yeah.
No.
Expiry dates on them.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Who knows,
man? Anyway, you have to look at that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's one thing I realized. Like, all the extra stuff I have outside is worthless.
Yep.
Yeah. So, anyways. But yeah, the two new... Do you guys find that the mental game is the biggest thing, biggest aspect?
That was 100%. You have to psych yourself totally.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me, is that I couldn't... again, different kind of suffering than I'm used to.
Cold will creep into your bones, and then it's just they're darker, colder days. You know, like if you don't get a sunny day, you don't feel cheery either, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know the snowier days, remember when we seen the moose?
Oh, yeah.
That was a blizzard, and you couldn't see worth a darn, right?
But,
God, when we did camp that night, I'm sure we hunkered in at around 4 o'clock, but it seemed like it was, like, dark.
Yeah for sure.
You know what I mean? Crazy.
And so, you know, it wasn't so much, it wasn't one thing that made the first time really mentally difficult for me. It's like a little bit of everything. Mm. And then add on how much my feet hurt, how uncomfortable my broken toe, uncomfortable my snowshoes were, uncomfortable my boots were, how much I changed temperature over, you know, a 5 minute span. I might go from really, really warm to, holy shit, I am perspiring and starting to get cold. And just like, you know, not being familiar with regulating my emotions in that was what I found very difficult, you know?
Yeah.
And so yeah, we can go out in the summer. I'll suffer all day.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me.
In the wintertime, when you're with a large group and everyone's waiting for each other and everyone's layering up too much, you know, because you should be starting cold, right? Uncomfortably cold, because you're going to be hot in five minutes.
Yeah.
But if everyone's bundled up waiting for each other and everyone's going to strip down again in another 10 minutes, it's just slowing down the group.
Yeah.
So if you can all come to a consensus, start cold, be bold, and then give her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's not the way it works.
No.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I mean, it's interesting just watching people, and being on the group management side of things. That's been the biggest learning curve for me over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Has been how to manage expectations, manage group when you're that, and then making judgment calls based on the whole group and not just you know, what you wanted, because it's not about you. Obviously, it's not about just me. It's about the entire group. But so that's why I like, there's a lot of things put in place here when we do the trips, like the checklists and the pre-trip briefings and that's why there's kind of like an application to join the trips. It's mostly just to see what everybody's experience is, mm-hmm. a little bit, and gauge that, and then have a conversation with them afterwards.
Exactly.
And then, you know, manage like what it's going to be like, talk about all the gear and why each piece of kit is on that list. And then there's a lot of little tricks too. Like this past weekend when we had this polar vortex, I was using the, I had one hand with a latex glove on, mm-hmm. inside my big Gore-Tex mitt, and one without it. And I'm like, I'm going to give this a go and see. Well, one with the latex mitt exponentially warmer than the other one, because it kept a lot of heat just on my skin.
But you will sweat after a point, and then it'll get cold. That's the problem with latex.
Yeah,
it will.
At a certain point. Depends what you're doing. If you're just manipulating gear, like for doing electronics, that's great.
Yeah, but the idea there was that it was like, so the idea was just to test it out, because I've done it before. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing big trips, the idea is just to keep my glove, because I sweat a lot, right? My feet and my hands. So I wrap latex.
You have to know yourself,
and
right?
It keeps the vapor barrier so the vapor barrier is on your skin, mm-hmm. in kind of in that enclosed area on the latex and your obviously hands. But you put them in a glove and it keeps my gloves dry.
Right.
Same deal with the boots, like doing the dress sock, garbage bag, insulated sock, and then put them in your boots, because my feet sweat quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I've done that quite a bit, and that's like a trick to keep your boots nice and dry on long trips.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a like expedition kind of trick.
Unless you fall in the river at the end of the night.
Yeah. Then you start from square one. Yeah. And then you wish you had wool. Wool's your friend out in the outdoors because that's right. Natural material. You're going to stay warm when wet, right? A lot of synthetics are no good. But last year I used the poly, like a neoprene sock.
Yep.
Merino wool inner was a part of the lining. Excellent sock. Very pricey, $70 for a pair.
Yeah.
But I wore them every day. When I finished the trip, each evening I took them off, let my foot dry for 2 minutes, put a thick wool sock on, then put my booties on.
Yeah.
And then I tore that other sock inside out to take some of the moisture away. That was it.
And sleep with it. You put it in your chest.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little trick. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Or favorite over your worst shoulders, they say, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, shoulders. Yeah. Yeah, the old shoulder. So it's usually like a sock, one sock for a base camp and one sock for the day. And then that day sock, when you get to base camp, you take
just
it
keep
off,
rotating.
Throw it on your shoulders and sleep with it. Exactly. It's so uncomfortable. It sucks. But, you know, you wake up with a dry pair of socks in the morning.
Because you're a furnace, right? Moisture's got to go somewhere eventually.
The got to sleep with your piss bottle, too.
I don't use one.
You don't use a piss bottle?
No. I find that, basically speaking, I think we're not drinking enough outdoors anyway, I find, on some of these trips. So I find that I have a deficit when it comes to moisture.
Yeah.
And same with, I think we're calorie deficient also.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? So
it's hard to keep up.
I'm not worried about the calorie part, but the moisture for drinking, yeah. I try to have a nice warm tea or something just before in my own tent. I have, again, it's a Trangia burner alcohol stove. You just cook up your own little deal, ingest some nice warm fluid before bed, but your body is going to absorb all that.
But see, I piss in the middle of the night every shot. And so I got to have, I take an extra Nalgene just for pissing
that's
in.
That's crazy.
Just for pissing in.
Yeah.
And then, and you know, we won't say who, but somebody, somebody left their piss Nalgene outside of their sleeping bag last year and then had to carry it frozen for 3 days.
Brutal. Brutal.
Well, on that note, man, I think that's our time.
The piss Nalgene.
Yeah.
We're going to end it on the piss Nalgene.
Piss Nalgene, yeah.
Don't mind going in the woods when you have to go. That's it.
Well, Gord, awesome. Well, thanks for inviting us in your home.
It's been great.
And having a little chat. And it's been on the list to get you on this podcast for a while.
Trail Manager on Instagram. The best handle.
Thanks, gentlemen.